This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Hello and welcome to Trumpet Hour this Friday, April 26th. I'm Philip Nice with our Philadelphia trumpet writers, Andrew Miller.
Hello.
Mihailo Zekic.
Good to be here.
Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And Jeremiah Jacques.
Hello there.
And we're going to start this week with Andrew Miller's section. He covers Anglo-America, the Anglo-America region, and that includes the United States, England, Australia, Canada, and the other English-speaking nations that descended from a common ancestor. You can learn more about that in the United States and Britain and Prophecy on thetrumpet.com/library. Avail yourself of that, and avail yourself of Andrew's update on what's been happening in Anglo-America.
Yeah, in Australia this week, a court ordered the X social media platform to remove videos of a violent Islamist stabbing attack on Bishop Bar Mari Emanuel during an April 15th church service. Elon Musk, the owner of X, denounced the court's decision as an attack on free speech. Also, after approving a massive $61 billion foreign aid bill to Ukraine, in a 311 to 212 vote, the U.S. House of Representatives refused to pass a similar U.S.-Mexico border security bill. And J.P. Morgan Chase Jamie Dimon is concerned that the U.S. economy could be en route to repeat the economic woes of the 1970s.
That conflict in Australia over the X social media platform is a continuation of what we've been talking about, this war over free speech, which is a war over freedom. It's interesting to see how just out in the open that is at this point. And those who would censor, and Australia surprisingly enthusiastic about censorship in COVID and still today, to see them and people in a position to censor, fighting for it openly. I mean, still claiming it's democracy or whatever, but fighting openly for increased powers to censor people, that's a really global phenomenon at this point. What's been the main story in Anglo-America this week that if you haven't been checking the news this week, you need to know about?
Yeah, death to the Jews. That's a phrase that we're hearing across U.S. college campuses for the last 2 weeks, really. And it's shocking. I think it's been about 83 years since the Holocaust began, and the mantra after that was never again. But now we're seeing, like, in university campuses where the people are presumably well-educated, you're just having just violent attacks on Jewish students because of the war between Israel and Hamas. Now, Columbia, Harvard, and Yale seem to be the epicenter of this. I think Columbia has been particularly violent, where they've actually announced that they're going to do online classes so that students don't gather together in classrooms for Jewish safety. That's a university policy decision. Actually, some of like the local rabbis have even recommended that Jews just don't go to class for a while. These protests are getting so bad. Columbia, that seems to be the worst one, and then Harvard and MIT and Yale probably aren't far behind it. It's actually even going into like University of Ohio, University of Texas. So dozens of other universities spreading out through this. I think there's been about 500 people arrested in these protests, which are getting violent, where there's all sorts of just really concerning chants being made at these rallies. The death to the Jews one is probably the most shocking. That's why I began with that. But you're also hearing things like death to the Zionist state. It's a little more specific. Jews out. End the occupation now. Stop arming Israel. We want justice. And so you can see that allegedly these protests are students protesting against the war between Israel and Hamas, even though Hamas started that war. They're definitely taking Hamas's side in the conflict and wanting the Jews to either die or leave Israel. I think it's particularly concerning, though, is like anti-Semitism is always concerning, and no matter what forms it comes in, left-wing anti-Semitism's generally a little different than to like the anti-Semitism of the Nazis. The anti-Semitism of the Nazis focused a lot more on race, Jews being ethnically inferior. We need to purge the gene pool of this element. Left-wing anti-Semitism's not ideologically supposed to focus on race. It more focuses on class. So if you've got like a migrant crisis, like the Mexicans coming in to the United States, you support the migrants because they're poorer than the locals. But then if you've got something like Israel, where you've got Jews going back to Israel after the Holocaust, but they're generally more richer and more successful than the Palestinians who lived there before, now you're against the newcomers, like the immigrants, because it's like it was really it's a focus on class warfare. And so this one, like I said, generally these Marxist professors that these college students are listening to, they're really phrasing Israel's this colonizing power. They're coming in, they're taking lands away from the indigenous peoples. And it's supposed to be a class warfare thing. But yet now what started as a Marxist protest against not Jews, but Israelis or people in the nation state of Israel, they're not hearing people chant death to the Israeli citizens of Jewish ancestry who came to Palestine after 1948. It's death to the Jews, which is an ethnic group. And so you're actually kind of getting this transmortification into just what started out as like a class warfare thing to just an outright racist attack on the Jewish people. And so it really does bring to mind, I heard it said once, I forget who said it, that if fascism ever comes to the United States, it'll be labeled as anti-fascism. And you're definitely seeing that with like these same people who call Trump the Hitler pig, or they talk about, oh, Trump's a fascist. You hear that all the time. Trump's a fascist. Trump's a fascist. Trump's a fascist. As it's the same left-wing professors who are saying Trump's a fascist are inspiring students to go out there and chant death to the Jews and supporting like socialist policies Hitler would have approved of, racist policies against Jewish people Hitler would have approved of, all the while saying that Donald Trump is Hitler.
These are leading universities, America's leading universities, that all at the same time have erupted in protests and in bizarre demonstrations of solidarity with the Palestinians, quote unquote, but specifically, as you alluded to, as you mentioned, Hamas, the terrorist organization Hamas, that can you remember the pictures? It wasn't that long ago. Do you remember the videos of the Hamas terrorist kneeling in the street and shooting a rocket-propelled grenade at a car full of people just driving down a sleepy road on a morning drive? In the immediate aftermath, when it's not possible for those memories to have faded, there is direct and open support for Hamas, not in the streets of Gaza, not in the streets of Muslim nations in the Middle East, but in America's centers of highest education. And you said they're presumably well-educated, and they are, because remember, education, by definition, is the one generation passing on its beliefs, values, and knowledge to another. Education is not the same thing as the truth. So those beliefs and values and knowledge have been passed on. Those people are highly educated in wrong education. And it's shocking to see this in the highest centers of learning in America, even when you're expecting to be shocked these days.
Well, I think that what you mentioned with the truth, that's ultimately what it all comes down to with this, whether it's these protests now or the protests that happened when the immediate aftermath of the attack happened or that kind of thing. You think about when I went to university, I found that young college educated people generally have a pretty good grasp of what's going on in the world, whether it's things, details that are happening in places like Ukraine or Xinjiang or a lot of these other regions we talk about on this program over and over again. You don't see masses of protesters saying from the river to the sea, Donbass will be free, or support for rallies against Chinese colonization in traditional Uyghur lands. You always have this pointed back to Israel, even though they like to rope in, say, the Jews at large, when people that may not have anything to do with the state of Israel, people that are against what Israel is doing in Gaza, they like to paint blanket what's going on in Israel with the Jews, and no matter what Israel itself does, it's always the wrong choice. And ultimately, it comes down to who the Jewish people are, what the state of Israel is, what it represents. I remember the British journalist Melanie Phillips, who's Jewish, came over and gave some talks over here. She mentioned the what got her in trouble with the Guardian newspaper, the left-wing paper that she used to work for. She was covering something about Israel. She was a little bit less negative than some of her other people, and she got a snide comment from one of her coworkers saying that she's just an Old Testament fundamentalist. And she thought originally that was just somebody poking at her because she was Jewish. But ultimately, no, it's because whatever happens in Israel, the state of the people that gave us the Bible, the state that's trying to bring back that heritage, that's what it represents. And anything that happens to Israel that strengthens its position there ultimately is related to the Bible and is giving the Bible and its worldview credence. That ultimately goes back to why no matter what Israel does, no matter whether they turn to the right hand or to the left, it's always in a negative light because Israel represents biblical values. And to a lot of Marxist professors, atheist professors, antagonistically hostile professors to religion, when they see Israel do something, trying to enforce their claim to the land, that's ultimately what it comes down to. Whether those students realize it or not when they're drinking up that propaganda, I don't know. But that's ultimately the source of that all.
It's interesting, the specific targeting of the Jews. The Jews who have taken great pains, even historically, not to be religious, not to be associated with the Bible in many cases. Many secular Jews, even the Aliyahs, by which they came back to that land before Zionism took root, many of them were conspicuously not religious. And yet there's this longstanding, specific, targeted hatred for the Jews that you can't explain. That someone better than I has said several times that anybody who's going to claim the Bible is a fairy tale has to explain to me the Jews. And I would add to that the hatred, the specific hatred for the Jews.
Yeah, and it is that hatred for the Jews that really brings us to the prophetic significance of this. There is a pretty mysterious prophecy in Isaiah 9, verses 12 through 21, about the end time that says, Manasseh shall devour Ephraim, and Ephraim Manasseh. Together they shall be against Judah. And so to have to understand that prophecy, you have to know who Ephraim, Manasseh, and Judah are. Judah is pretty easy because Jew is just an abbreviation of Judah. So the Jews are Judah. But as you mentioned earlier in the program, our book, United States and Britain in Prophecy, will prove that Manasseh is the United States and Ephraim is Great Britain. So this prophecy is about America being against Britain and Britain being against America. But the one thing they agree on is they're against Judah. It's like a breaking of a brotherhood where Ephraim and Manasseh were the two sons of Judah's younger brother, Joseph. So they're brother nations that turn against each other. And you're really seeing that with the university protests today. We did an article, one of our contributors, Mr. Brad McDonald, did an article years ago, Can Israel Toss Germany? Where he pointed out that, like I said, just because Merkel's pro-Israel, it's unwise to trust Germany because the German people aren't, by and large. You could say the same thing in the United States. It's like there could be a temptation to trust, if Donald Trump returns to office, to trust the Trump administration. But if the colleges are teaching this propaganda against Israel, then you can't trust the American people as a whole, the whole support throughout the whole body that's going to make America a reliable ally for Israel because of the education system. And so even if the incoming Trump administration were to make some pro-Israel decisions, it does show that Manasseh as a whole is turning against Judah, like that prophecy says.
That's a powerful example and a prophecy that we don't talk about as often. We have talked about it before, but that was in Isaiah 9. You've also mentioned that the sickness in American universities is a good article to look up there at thetrumpet.com, the sickness in American universities. And I think that's just a powerful and a condemning point that the American people are not a reliable ally, as this Isaiah 9 indicates, and that we have educated ourselves so to be. So thank you for that Anglo-America update, Andrew Miller, a region that it turns out has much to do with the Bible and Bible history. The Jews in Israel are not the only nation with a history that goes back to the Bible. You heard Mihailo Zekic there just now talking about these protests as well and his thoughts. Mihailo, you cover the Middle East region. Give us an update on what's happening there where all these people are protesting, what's going on, what's emanating from the Middle East. Give us an update on the Middle East.
So on Tuesday, the Lebanese terror group Hezbollah claimed it launched its deepest strike into Israel yet on the coastal city of Acre. It's a bit north of Haifa. Israel for itself said it intercepted some projectiles coming in from the north, but they've been a bit muted about the whole situation. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know about, but it goes to say that the tensions between Israel and Hezbollah have not cleaned up, even though you might not hear it on the news as much anymore. There's still a lot of tension there. Where that will lead is anyone's guess at this point, but it's still a place to watch. Also on Thursday, the United States announced that it will be withdrawing roughly 75 special ops forces from Chad in the coming days. No, I'm not talking about your neighbor's college-age son. I'm referring to a country in the northern bit of Africa, the Sahel, that part just under the Sahara Desert. That might not seem like a big deal, but this comes on the heels of the announcement last week that Niger, that country also in the Sahel region that keeps popping up, is basically forcing the roughly 1,000 U.S. troops to pack up and leave. So, again, not a significant number, but at the same time, we're seeing all these African countries one by one basically telling their American presence, get out, we don't want you. And more often than not, it's Russia and to a lesser extent Iran that's filling in the void. So we could expect the same thing to happen to Chad. They're already pretty close to Russia as it is. So we are definitely seeing a power vacuum occurring in northern Africa with the U.S. being kicked out by a lot of these despotic regimes, and it'll be interesting to see who fills the void. And then finally, on April 22nd, Javad Karimi Ghodushi, who's a member of the Iranian Parliament's National Security and Foreign Policy Committee, tweeted the following, quote, "If permission is issued, it is 1 week before the first test." That's referring to a nuclear test. This comes on the heels of a number of other Iranians in prominent positions, in knowledgeable positions, saying that however this war with Israel goes, we have a bomb ready. We just have to make a few tweaks and we can go ahead and start becoming nuclear. There's so much in the dark about what we know about Iran's nuclear program, but if we can take this at face value, and again, there's a lot of other Iranian politicians corroborating what this guy said, Iran basically already has a nuclear bomb, an unassembled nuclear bomb, but it won't take long to assemble it. What Iran is waiting for to put it together, it would obviously have to come up from the highest levels, from Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. We don't know, but it's there. And once some kind of red line is crossed, we can be sure that they're going to put it together pretty fast, because they wouldn't have this on hand if they didn't want to use it.
Mihailo Zekic and I have been emailing back and forth this morning, principally as I have challenged him to make us care about Russia in Africa and the diminished U.S. influence there. He's going to be writing about that for the next Philadelphia Trumpet. Get your subscription at thetrumpet.com. But obviously the biggest development that we could possibly talk about would be this apparent imminent nuclear test in Iran. Of course, Iran pursuing nuclear weapons for years now, and being able to have a bomb, purchase a bomb perhaps from North Korea or somewhere is one thing, but having a nuclear program, domestic nuclear program that can produce multiple nuclear weapons and maintain them is a whole nother ballgame, and that is what Iran has been pursuing. Mihailo, do you think this is it?
Well, there's been a bit of a wrinkle in that. On that same day, Iran's Sharg newspaper reported that the Iranian government is trying to get talks for a new nuclear deal up and going. This is a bit interesting because when you go back to what we talked about last week and that Israeli strike that took out an air defense system in Isfahan that most likely was guarding all those nuclear sites in there, a message from Israel saying that we can take those nuclear sites out if we wanted to, back off. That happens, and now all of a sudden we hear that Iran is talking with the United States about a new nuclear deal. And it's not just this one Iranian newspaper that said this. Last Saturday, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, we heard a clip from him last week, confirmed that nuclear talks occurred while he was visiting New York. And so what exactly this means, how far these talks are along, whether we'll hear more about them. There's a lot in the dark. But again, Israel strikes an area around nuclear facility. Iran says, okay, you want to do nuclear negotiations. And apparently the Americans are willing to get the ball rolling on this. Why they would do that from a purely rational common sense perspective when you're in the middle of a war with Iran, when they just launched this attack, and now they're talking about a new deal that has nothing to do with this war, like on paper, that has nothing to do with these attacks on Israel. To make a deal with them at this point is irrational, from at least from a purely physical perspective. This is what the German press agency Newswire wrote about this. Quote, in return for a de-escalation, that is of the tit-for-tats we've been seeing, demanded by the West, there will be new nuclear negotiations. The aim is to lift the sanctions that are paralyzing Iran. End quote. And the German press agency speaks that they'd like to have it modeled after the formal JCPOA, that Obama negotiated deal that we talked about for years before I was even on this program, on how it was such a bad deal. And the fact that the U.S. is listening to this, I mean, if they get sanctions relief now, where do they think that money's going to go? It's going to go to another 300 drones and whatever, and then some, attacking Israel. The fact that they would even entertain such ideas says something about the United States. And the fact that it would even tie back into the JCPOA, which, again, had a lot of loopholes that Iran blatantly took advantage of to get a nuclear bomb, and that the U.S. and the rest of the world did nothing about, again, that says something. I don't know what, again, how serious this is. Personally, I suspect that some of these tweets and other measures going out are trying to saber rattle a bit, make it more likely for like the U.S. to say, okay, well, we need a nuclear deal because look how close they are. You know, this is going to save the planet. Even when some of these guys, like the Iranian parliamentarian, some of these other quotes they were given to Iranian media, they know their comments are being translated by the West. And it's being given by officials that are high up, that are knowledgeable, but not too high up. So it doesn't sound like it's official policy. It's just enough to make people afraid. And the fact that all these are coming just at this time, again, there's some coordinating behind the scenes with the Americans back and forth to get this kind of thing going, to convince the public that this is the right thing to do. When, at least, if you care about the Jewish state that, as we heard about, was set up after the Holocaust, that's facing a barrage from all sides, and if you care about billions of dollars not being given to Iran so it can wipe the Jewish state off the map, if you care about Iran not getting a massive boost overnight to its arsenal, then this is definitely something to watch out for.
You just think about how you mentioned that sanctions are paralyzing Iran there. It seems like at so many occasions the United States could have permanently weakened, if not toppled, the Iranian regime, not by killing a bunch of Iranian soldiers in a war, but just through strident sanctions, through not giving them a lifeline to continue their nuclear weapons program. There's so many opportunities that specifically the Obama administration and now the Obama-run Biden regime have not only failed to take advantage of, but intentionally not taken advantage of and intentionally short-circuited to keep that regime in power. I mean, now it's on the verge of another nuclear negotiation to give it even more power. It's launched direct attacks from its soil onto Israeli soil. It's certainly been behind all kinds of terror for decades, and yet it continues to grow, continues to exist, continues to kill people, continues to be not only tolerated, but somehow facilitated by the United States of America.
Continues to kill people often enough with billions of dollars worth of U.S. taxpayers' contributions. And for the average U.S. watcher of news, when they see stories like this pop up, when they see their government actively starting a country that could start nuclear World War III, they have to wonder what is going on. I mentioned that this is irrational. It can't be explained physically, but there is a Bible prophecy that speaks about this. 2 Kings 14, verses 26 to 28, that talk about a conspiracy, really, to blot out the name of Israel under heaven that attacks Israel from all sides, and to the point where the bitter affliction leaves Israel with no helper. We talked about how this isn't just talking about the state of Israel, but also the United States. And we have plenty of resources on our website about that. But the big thing about this is that this attack is coming from the top down. And if our listeners would like to learn more, I'd recommend our editor-in-chief, Mr. Jeff Fleury's book, America Under Attack. It's one of our most advertised books these days. And specifically, if they would like to learn why America is sponsoring Iran, Chapter 6 can answer some of those questions.
That's Chapter 6 of America Under Attack. There's a reason why we emphasize it. There's a reason why it gets its own website, AmericaUnderAttack.com. And as you said there, Mihailo, specifically Chapter 6. And so, dear listener, if you're out there, you're confused, you think this is wild, you're absolutely right. This is irrational, it's immoral, it's wicked, it has consequences, and it's happening in Israel, it's happening in America, it's happening in a terrible way in America's next generation, its college students. And there is not an explanation for it. There's not a full explanation for it. In conservative commentators and the great thinkers and the Republican Party, there is not an explanation for what is happening. And there's definitely not an explanation, a full explanation like there is in this book, America Under Attack. That's a huge claim to make. I understand that. You know, really, this book is the one thing that says what the real cause is, and all these other really smart guys, really experienced guys, really well-funded networks, they don't know the cause. That's what we're telling you. That's the claim. And so you've got to look at Chapter 6 of America Under Attack and see how it holds up. You're listening to Trumpet Hour Week in Review. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
Hello and welcome back to Trumpet Hour Week in Review here on KPCG. This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. You can find us at thetrumpet.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, make sure you subscribe to the free Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. It'll come to you 10 times a year. We forget to mention sometimes it's completely free. It's always been completely free. And that's kind of an interesting thing in and of itself, that not only that, but it does not, and we do not solicit donations from the public. There's no requests for contributions, donations, love offerings, whatever they call it, no telethons, no, none of that. You'll just get the trumpet, and you can compare it to what you're seeing in the world. You can compare it to the prophecies that are mentioned in the Bible, and you can make up your mind as to whether there's something very unique about the trumpet. In the same way that we talked about America Under Attack being a unique book, there's something to it, we assert. It's up to you to prove that for yourself. So that's at thetrumpet.com. Subscribe. Our third region is Europe. Richard Palmer is there in England in our office, and he's been watching Europe. Give us an update on Europe, if you would, sir.
French President Emmanuel Macron gave another impassioned speech for the EU to break away from the United States and be a power in its own right yesterday. He said, "We must build a Europe capable of showing it is never the vassal of the United States of America." He also said, "The era of basing our production in China, of delegating our defense to the US and getting our energy from Russia is over. The rules of the game have changed." And he called for several practical steps to accomplish that. He wants the EU to focus on buying weapons from other EU countries. He wants a shared kind of pool of EU-wide debt to finance defense spending. And he wants what's called a capital markets union that would allow, you know, instead of banks being broken up into smaller national banks, you would have that funding be pooled where it can be used for spending on EU-wide projects. I toyed with doing this as my main story. This is something that Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has really focused on, this changing attitude in France where France has decided they would rather empower Germany to create this kind of European superstate rather than work with the United States of America. So I think it's a significant talk. It also is just talk at this stage. And as Mr. Fleury points out in his article, it's also important to note that France doesn't have the power to do some of these things on their own. And there are things here that he set out that Germany isn't necessarily behind. So, yeah, talk is cheap. But what stands out to me from this is the repeated emphasis on separating from the United States. We've seen that several occasions, and this was a key theme behind that speech. And then he does have an increased urgency for a lot of these projects. He wants many of them done within 12 months, showing that he's in much more of a hurry than before. But this trend of France breaking with America, that's something that Mr. Fleury covered in our cover article of the latest Trumpet print, France's Deadly Ignorance About Germany. Another story that really caught my eye, it comes from Germany itself. It's about the Alternative for Deutschland, their upstart far-right, in some cases even neo-Nazi party. We tend to think of some of these far-right parties, I think, as the preserve of an older generation, reactionary people who want things to go back, say, to the way things were in their youth. You know, I think that's how it's portrayed in the media. However, a poll showed that the AfD is very much becoming a youth party. It is the most popular party among those aged 14 to 29, and its popularity has well more than doubled. So it's kind of been static for the German population as a whole over that time, while really increasing for young people. The Green Party used to be the number one slot. They've dramatically fallen. So you're seeing a youth movement now on board with this fringe party. And I also think just desperate for, again, change within Germany, a different kind of solution in Germany. Actually, the most popular party, if you put party in quotes and are a bit looser with your definition, is Weißnicht. I don't know. That has also seen quite a dramatic growth of support. 25%, they just say they don't know. They can't decide. And then the AfD is on about 22%. So German youth, very dissatisfied with the way things are at the moment, looking for this alternative for Deutschland party or any real alternative to politics as usual within Germany, and keep watching for a strong change there. And then France is not the only country that is empowering Germany. The UK is also doing that, I think less at the expense of the United States and more kind of like Andrew covered with Israel, a mistaken trust within Germany. So the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, he met with the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin on the 24th of April. And they talked about organized crime and defense cooperation. They talked about how they're much stronger together and how they want a new chapter in their relationship. And they agreed as a practical step to jointly develop a remote-controlled howitzer. So small, but practical. And they're looking to Germany for their defense in the same way that Israel is.
What really stands out to me there, that Germanic youth desperate for change, and you can't blame them on that count, as you've said before. And then the French president pushing for change, and Britain as well, opening some doors for German leadership, for German empowerment. The thing you can tell for sure, even with, as you said, talk is cheap, but when you're a president of France, you are staking your leadership on that talk, you know, and if what you say doesn't ever happen, then you don't stay in power too long. So he is motivated to change the calculus there as far as European defense. And we know that we're looking for not France to take the lead, but Germany. But the thing that I get from this is Europe tomorrow is going to be different than Europe today, for sure. It is changing, and it's not going to be, as you've written before, just this relatively quiet part of the world. And when Germany gets a hold of it, when Europe changes, it's obviously got superpower potential. It's got super military potential. It's got enormous economic potential. It's changing. Things are not going to be so quiet in Europe in the future. What's your main story that you'd like to draw our attention to this week?
That main story is another important aspect of this change. Yesterday, Germany's parliament voted overwhelmingly to set up a new annual Veterans Day for Germany, something they have not had in the kind of the modern German state. June 15th will be this Veterans Day. May 15th, we'll see a centralized celebration in Berlin. And this is part of a shift in Germany's attitude towards its military. It shows that a shift has already happened. And I think it's going to prompt more of a shift in Germany's view of its military in the future as well. So they've been talking about doing this for more than a decade. The first initiative was about 12 years ago to have a Veterans Day, and nobody was interested. It just wasn't a priority. Now Germany's military, it's not just military spending, but the role of the military in society, being proud and supportive of the German military, has changed since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And living in a dangerous continent now and having an aggressive nation invading another one has made people appreciate that military more. is also more of an interest in what Germany's soldiers do abroad. Deutsche Welle says that there's been little interest within Germany until now in what soldiers do abroad, but says that this new law aims to change that. So they were actively working to change the perception of Germany's military. And this kind of comes amidst months of trends in this direction. So last year, the Christian Democratic Union announced plans for a federal program of patriotism that they were pushing. They wanted more flag waving, more anthem singing, more ties to the military, more military on display. They wanted a national day to celebrate the Constitution. They wanted more German symbols around. They wanted to promote patriotic self-assurance within the Bundestag, within the German parliament. So you're seeing a full-scale push to change Germany's view of its history and military.
Well, we can't say that we didn't see this coming. I don't think we'll be able to say that. We have been tracking this, and I say this often, but you know, I remember, and Mr. Palmer, you remember earlier days when there was not nearly so much to report week to week as far as the development of Europe as a power, as far as the development of Germany as a power, and certainly not as much to report on the development of the German military spending, as you mentioned, German command over other European military units, over de facto other European militaries, these calls from Germany and France to make Europe independent of the United States in terms of defense, which would mean Germany would be the leader of that. And then, like you're saying, the German culture, the German youth supporting far-right parties, the German culture supporting its veterans. And again, there's always good reason to do things. You know, there's always a good argument to be made for appreciating someone who puts his life on the line to defend your country or to advance your country's interests. But there's a really specific reason why you need to watch Germany. You need to see what's happening there, and you need to fear it.
Right. And this is all about resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire. And I mean, we've talked about this kind of offline, where it's just amazing. You see memes on Twitter about how great the Crusades were and Crusaders were and the Holy Roman Empire in years past. And that's what this is all about, is promoting a very positive view of something that was actually very bloody and brutal. Crusaders were not what's based is the term. These were not kind of like cool moral guys. They were going and committing massacres and massive atrocities. And so were the people on the other side. But the fact that the people on the other side were bad does not necessarily mean that the ones that are fighting them are good. So all of this history is being resurrected in so many different ways. If we're seeing that in the English-speaking West, it's much more so within Germany, because the groundwork is being laid for this rise of the Holy Roman Empire that we have forecast for a long, long time. In 2018, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry wrote, "Europeans are doing something they have never done since the vile and murderous Sixth Head. They're publicizing the Holy Roman Empire. They don't publicize what Adolf Hitler did. Too many people remember that bloody history. Instead, they cloak it in the tradition of Charlemagne. And it is the same story. Not as many people died in the First Reich because they didn't have access to the same military technology then, but it's the same ambition. And it's coming from similar time periods as well." Mr. Flurry continues, "Germany has repeatedly emerged as a devastating military power. We are seeing that beast rise again today. Look at Europe. Germany is once again at the helm. A rearmed and militant Germany will prove to be one of the United States' biggest nightmares." And again, that's what Andrew was talking about. And so I think a lot of people aren't really concerned by this revival of German patriotism, but this is the spirit that is rising up. And Mr. Flurry really exposes and explores that in that 2018 article, "The Holy Roman Empire Goes Public Big Time." And like you said, this is something that he's talked about for years, that Mr. Armstrong before him talked about for years, because it is something that is very directly and provably connected to the Bible. It's a critical event in end time Bible prophecy. And so you are, you see this rising, watching the Bible unfold and happen before your eyes.
This is something I hope you will email us about, letters@thetrumpet.com. I have been asking pretty much everyone I talk to if they're seeing what I'm seeing and what Mr. Palmer just mentioned there, and that is this popularization of the European culture in general, the medieval culture more specifically. And when you're talking about the medieval culture, you're talking about the Holy Roman Empire, Catholic culture in most cases. I'm seeing that. I'm seeing that the Holy Roman Empire go public big time. And I wasn't thinking of that. I wasn't thinking of that article. I was just thinking, wow, for a guy who doesn't search for Europe and Catholicism and that era of history very much as far as my online habits go. I'm getting served a lot of that when I go on social media, on the Trumpet social media account. I've been asking everybody, are you seeing this too? Are you seeing a popularization of the old ways, but specifically a popularization of the old world, old ways? Email me, letters@thetrumpet.com. I'm interested. I'm writing about this for the next Trumpet, and I want to know how much of it is just me looking for it and how much of it you're seeing as well. We've talked in the Trumpet meetings that it's not just me. It is out there, this change in culture in Germany and the very, very, very early parts of a change in culture for Catholic Europe, a repopularization of Catholic Europe. Is that the change in Europe is leading to? You'll have to watch closely. You'll have to keep listening to Trumpet Hour and reading the Trumpet, but we'll keep an eye on it for sure. The next region is Asia. Jeremiah Jacques, give us your update on Asia, if you would.
China is preparing to launch a cyber attack against U.S. infrastructure. That's according to a new warning the FBI issued this week. It says that hackers linked to the Chinese government are lying in wait for, quote, just the right moment to deal a devastating blow. So this threat comes from the cyber espionage group called Volt Typhoon. We've discussed them on Trumpet Hour before. And the FBI says that they've gained access to American systems related to maritime activity, communications, manufacturing, and electric and gas utilities. So just a whole range of systems that have already been infiltrated with botnet malware. And in some cases, the hackers are now apparently just waiting for the right moment to activate this malware that they've already installed to wreak havoc on our systems. Another quick story here about America's concerns over TikTok, the social media app that's run essentially by the Chinese Communist Party. This was an app that President Trump was very worried about, since the Chinese Communist Party can manipulate the algorithm to really curate the feeds of young Americans, and since the CCP uses that power to fill the heads of young Americans with all kinds of corrosive ideas, like that pro-Hamas insanity that Andrew spoke about at the beginning of the show. So President Trump, back in 2020 when he was in the White House, he tried to ban TikTok. He issued an executive order saying that it would be banned unless the parent company sold it so that it would no longer be under Chinese Communist Party control. Trump's executive order was later blocked in court, though, so it didn't go through. But now the U.S. is trying once again to either ban TikTok or force it to be sold, and it does seem to be going through this time. And yesterday, we had a very telling response from TikTok's parent company. They essentially said they would rather just shut the whole thing down than to sell it. So this is billions of dollars worth of value that they're apparently just walking away from. And that's very telling because it shows us that the Chinese Communist Party's motivation with TikTok was never about money, but it was only about making young Americans hate America, hate themselves, hate their God-given sex, and, you know, to make them love Hamas, love China, love Russia, love depravity of all kinds. And it's also notable that China bans TikTok inside of China. They don't like to talk about that when they're crying free speech, First Amendment, begging to be able to keep operating in America. But inside of China, TikTok is banned because the CCP doesn't want their youth exposed to harmful ideas. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this. I think it's possible that the parent company will end up selling it. But for now, they are at least saying that they would rather just shut the Trojan horse down.
Isaac Lorenz, you are our sound engineer. You're here with us. Figure out a way to make that go viral. Press the go viral button, Isaac, because that is the encapsulation of TikTok. That's what we are trying to say. It is a war for your minds. It is a war for what's right and wrong. It's mental warfare. It's moral warfare. And the Chinese Communist Party knows that. And many Americans who are still comfortable, as long as we're still comfortable, we just don't get up in arms. Again, you've heard it as psychological warfare and so forth. It's mental warfare. It's moral warfare. It's what's happening in your homes with your kids, with your college-age kids, that is determining the future of this country in a very specific and a very real world kind of way. It's not all just, quote unquote, the economy, stupid. It's not just, you know, your military power or your economic power. It's your morals. It's what's right and wrong. And if you're not battling, if there's not a war in your home over right and wrong, in your own mind and with your spouse and your children, you are losing that war because the war does exist. And I think that there's no more just factual way of encapsulating it in a news item than what Jeremiah Jacques just did for you there. Jeremiah, you've got a main story that you want to sink our teeth into a little bit more. What's that main story?
Yeah, the main one is that the Chinese Navy has established a permanent presence in Cambodia. New satellite imagery shows that Chinese warships have been docked at a Cambodian naval base for close to 5 months now. This is a certain part of the Ream Naval Base, and no other ships, not even Cambodian ships, have been allowed to use this pier area that the Chinese are using. So this follows reports that we discussed on Trumpet Hour a few years back, saying Cambodia had secretly agreed to grant China's military exclusive rights to part of the Ream base for about 30 years. The agreement said the Chinese military would be permitted to station soldiers and warships there. And so this new satellite imagery shows that this is now happening. China has now established what looks to be a permanent and exclusive presence at this naval base. So this means China is well positioned to launch military operations from inside the Gulf of Thailand. That will really strengthen China's ability to enforce its claim over the South China Sea. And even more significant, I think, is that this boosts China's control over the Strait of Malacca. That's just a strategically vital sea gate. Somewhere around 90% of South China Sea crude oil shipments pass through there. So it's easily in the world's top five most important sea gates. And now China has a base very close to it and could have a lot of power over who is allowed to ship through there. So this is a very worrying development.
An exclusive PRC military presence at Ream could threaten Cambodia's autonomy and undermine regional security as well. We and countries in the region have expressed concerns about the lack of transparency on the intent, the nature, the scope of this project, as well as the role of the PRC military is playing in its construction and in its post-construction use of the facility.
That was Ned Price there, who serves as the deputy to the U.S. representative to the United Nations. And he's just emphasizing how there is zero transparency with this alarming deal. Cambodia and China, which he calls the PRC there, they've done it all under as much secrecy as they could. And Ned Price also says that this threatens Cambodia's autonomy. But the Cambodians clearly don't care about that. They appear to be eagerly subjecting themselves to China, even if that means basically making Cambodia a vassal to China.
Yeah. Why does America have the power that it does? Why do Americans live the comfortable and relatively safe life that we've lived over the past generation? It's because of naval bases and deals and air bases and control of strategic areas just like this. And you can see now China getting in on that in a huge way, where Cambodian ships don't even use a Cambodian facility like the Chinese forces can. This is how you get yourself into a position where you can't be stopped. It's deals like this that don't seem all that interesting on the surface at first, but they have huge consequences.
Very good point. Yes. And this particular story here is not just a win for China, but it does come at the expense of American power, because the U.S. has pumped vast amounts of aid into Cambodia over the years, billions of dollars for military assistance and to foster economic growth in Cambodia. America has helped to train Cambodian soldiers and has even built many installations for the Cambodian military, including some of the facilities at this very base, the Ream Naval Base, that Cambodia is now opening up to China. So it's a real humiliation for America, because despite all of that money that America has spent and all of those efforts, Cambodia is cold-shouldering the U.S. and giving one of America's main adversaries, China, invaluable access to this base. And analysts are very concerned that this could specifically hinder U.S. efforts if Taiwan were to come under attack, because America's military doctrine shows that in the event of an attack on Taiwan, many U.S. forces charged with Taiwan's defense, customarily they would pass through the Strait of Malacca to help them. But with a Chinese presence here in Cambodia, China could really have quite a lot of say over who can transit the Strait of Malacca there. So that could complicate the ability of some American forces to get to Taiwan. So it really has a lot of potential to undercut U.S. power in this region. And this is interesting, I think, because the Bible says in the end time, an era will begin called the times of the Gentiles. You see that term in Luke 21. And if you look at the context, it's clear that these times of the Gentiles occur after a major shift in global power takes place, basically taking power away from America and pushing it toward two main blocks. One of them is the German-led Europe that Mr. Palmer spoke about earlier, and the other one is an Asian bloc led by Russia and China. So for this prophesied era to occur, there really had to have been a big shift of power to China. China's one of those main Gentile powers there. And Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury last year, he said that it's clear that the world is now in the times of the Gentiles. And I think that Cambodia's move away from the U.S. and toward China, it's one small area where we can see this new era taking shape very clearly.
The times of the Gentiles. As you were talking, I was thinking of another phrase from the Bible, that your strength will be spent in vain. And Herbert W. Armstrong, writing the United States and Britain Prophecy, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury, leading the Trumpet for decades now, often speaking about the times of the Gentiles and your strength will be spent in vain, a specific warning to the ancestors of the American people, of the British people as well, and the other English-speaking nations, as I've said, and a couple of others, warning them that based on what happens in your mind, in your marriage, in your family, in your college-age students, is going to affect your strength as a nation, is going to affect, you will lose your bases, you will lose your economy, you will lose your diplomacy, you will lose your wars, you will lose the nation that was given to you in the first place by the God that you rebel against in your mind, in your marriage, in your family, in your town, in your society, in your nation. These things are connected. We're seeing that in a writ large in the news this week and every week, and we've got to learn that lesson. We've got to understand the connection that's taking place there. You can understand it much better by reading America Under Attack, as we mentioned at the top, as well as the United States and Britain in a Prophecy. So that's all the time we do have for Trumpet Hour Week in Review. We'll put links to those in the show notes for those of you who take advantage of that. And again, email me, lettersofthetrumpet.com, topic, are you seeing the Holy Roman Empire go big time? Let's see if we can get some extra thoughts on that, and I can write perhaps a better article. And you can read it in the Philadelphia Trumpet in our next issue. We appreciate you listening, and we look forward to being back with you next week.